Purpose is one of those loaded yet popular words that just doesn't seem to have a clear definition. I mean, what is purpose anyway? Do we find it? Do we already possess it? Do we cultivate it and grow it like a garden? Or do we run after it and pursue it? How does purpose impact or change our lives? I'm Andrea St. Louis, and I'm the owner and coach at Step Into Purpose Consulting. And each week, I want you to join me as I explore all things purpose, whether that's in your goal setting, in your friendships, your faith, our personal growth, or our professional development. Come get your weekly purpose power up with the insights and inspiration that you need so that you can live in alignment with your purpose and step boldly into your future. I hope you'll join me. I'm so glad to be leaning into friendship this season. Season 4, we are really talking about how friendship impacts our ability to live with purpose, live on purpose, to understand purpose, how our squad helps to frame our thinking, as well as how they help us to either move forward towards purpose or hold us back. That's the truth of it. That they impact our ability to get to our destination in life. And so we really want to look at the relationships that we have and how they are influencing not just our thinking, but our actions. I'm Andrea St. Louis, and I'm the owner of Step Into Purpose Consulting. I am leaning into friendship. I am on my Step Into Friendship journey, and so we are having Step Into Friendship conversations, and this is part two. This is my second conversation, and I am honored to have my friend Sonia Pope with me. She is the host and creator of Soul Work with Son, a podcast that you can hear on any of your favorite podcasting platforms. I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about herself, and then we are going to have a conversation about friendship and friendship transitions and whatever else the Lord might lead us into. So Sonia, I'm so happy to have you. One thing I didn't mention, this is my very first friend, y'all. My very, very, very first one, like 1980s, 1980 something.
I think we were born 86. We might have been friends by like 88, 89. We've been friends now for over 30 years. What a blessing, honestly.
Amazing.
I love that. I think that's one of my favorite things about our friendship is the longevity. So it's a joy. It's an honor of mine to be on your show. I absolutely love that. To see the way that we've connected again, it's just beautiful. So grateful to be here. I'm Sonia Pope. I am a wife and mom of four. They are 10 and under, and we're just running the Pope household the best way that we can. I love podcasting. It turned from a passion project of mine into something even more. It's evolving. We're creating a community of people who really, I think the goal, if there were ever two objectives, is to love hard and live well, that we just want to be known as people who really love. We want to be known like Jesus told us to be known by how well we love. And then also optimizing that. And I think the scriptures is the pathway. It's the guide to how do you get this great life? Search the scriptures and then do what it says, right? So loving hard, living well is the goal. So I do a little bit of writing, a little bit of tinkering in that way, but I've been blessed to be able to be a stay-at-home mom for all these years. Reluctantly, that's another story we'll tell for another time. Because I really just saw myself in corporate when I was a kid. So to be parenting and being domesticated, Jesus, never. And I feel like we need to have those conversations of the accidental housewife or stay-at-home mom, because baby, it's a real thing. Anyway, so that would pretty much be me in a nutshell. We live in Tampa, we love it here. We relocated a couple years ago and we're very, very excited.
Awesome. And you have a new ebook.
I do have a new ebook. Thank you. Okay. Working on that marketing. It's called Your Soul is Worth the Work. And for me, if I would ever be something that I love, it's formation. It is how we become. I was actually meditating on that today. What am I passionate about most? It's the process of becoming. How are we supposed to be more loving, more caring, really just more like Jesus? And that takes time. It takes time. And it also takes some real intentional steps headed in his direction. And so the book touches on that. How do we come out of something and into another? Because we're always moving. Even the idea of stagnation is really just, that's the illusion. You're moving, right? And so the book discusses some of that. And it's also a really big tiff off of the first season that we talked about. So we talk a little bit about Pharisees and all that stuff too. But yes, the book is on my website, sahnpope.com, S-A-H-N-P-O-P-E. And if you'd like to check it out, please do.
Yes, and I have it, and it is amazing. Absolutely amazing. It hits you right as soon as it opens. So.
Well, that really does mean a lot coming from
you've been warned. Yes. So I'm so glad to have you here. And so you talk about like going in and coming out and that we're always moving. And I think that takes us into our topic for today when we're talking about friendship transitions. And yeah. I think it's great to have this conversation with someone. Our lives have transitioned a lot between day one and now. And so just your thought on friendship transition from your perspective, like when you hear the term friendship transitions, what do you immediately think of?
You know, it's the first word that came to me is breakups, right? And the idea that friendships can feel harder than even breakups at times, especially if it's that, you know, those deep, really strong friendships. And so, I mean, we've already talked about coming in hot. We're just going to get right into it, right? And when you think about friends, I did a little bit of reflecting on this, and Proverbs, the Gospels, the way that it describes friendships with people, that's the only relationship that you can really find that is so deliberate and intentional, right? Like with siblings, when you grow up, you're in a family, if you have them, you already know how to develop your relationship because where are you going? You're in this house, you're in this family together. That bond is gonna come whether you like it or not with all of its dynamics. But friendship has this beautiful ability to say, hey, I think C.S. Lewis is the one who describes it as friendship being an issue of commonality. So the question is not, do you love me? It's more like, oh, you too? Oh, you like this too? You're interested in this too? So from this place of shared values, we connect. But the idea of there being a disconnect or a breaking away of that, it can be very jarring, it can be disorienting, and it can be deeply, deeply painful. So the idea of friendships, if we don't look at it from a proper perspective, man, that thing can tear you up. That thing can tear you up. But at the same time, there are some transitions that are necessary in friendships. And I think one thing that we do often is when we break our friendships or we stop being friends, because of that pain, I learned this a couple years ago, that anger, it's a secondary emotion, right? So if you peel back that layer of anger, typically it's fear or it's hurt that's really there. And so you'll see it every day. We look on Facebook and somebody's going, I didn't need you anyway, trust nobody or whatever, whatever. And what you're really hearing is the soul of a person that's in pain that says, hey, that hurt my feelings. You leaving hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And you can go ahead. I think that's something that just needs to be explored some more.
Yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit. So when we grow up, right? What is the idea that you think we learn most about friendship in terms of people being there? What do you think are some of the ideas that the messages that we received growing up in about friendship?
Yeah, I'm trying to teach some of that to my kids now. So some of the messages I think would be probably just to be kind, to share. You know, if you start at a very elementary level, the one thing I do notice about kids, it doesn't take anything for them to make a friend. No. Isn't that something? Like you literally, I've watched my 5-year-old and my 9-year-old, who basically she's never met a stranger. You put them on a playground, 2 minutes later, mom, look, it's my best friend. Yeah, sharing on the side. I'm going, what's their name, kid? What's right? But it just shows like, it doesn't take a whole lot to make friends. And something interesting happens the older that we get. I don't know if it's insecurity that sets in or fear of repeat, you know, bad experiences with friends. But I've seen this common trajectory now where adults were having issues with making friends.
And so I've heard a lot of that feedback as I've been leaning into friendship myself. A big piece of feedback I'm hearing, and I'm hearing them from women in their 30s who have spouses, have kids, have professions, like it doesn't matter which walk of life that came from, they're saying that I don't know how to make friends or I don't know how to grow my friendships. I don't feel like I have people who understand me. And so I'm like, at some point, there's something that we learn. So as I was reflecting on messages that we receive growing up, we definitely get the you know, be kind. And, you know, there's that lack of shyness in terms of talking to people and asking questions. I think there's a curiosity that we lose at some point. I think little kids are just curious. Watching my 9-year-old, my 6-year-old, people, they're just curious about what's happening. They ask questions they're not supposed to ask. It's always fun, right? But I think somehow we lose our curiosity. And then, and you, I'm gonna get a little touchy right here for a second, is that I remember, like, you hit your teen years and the message that you receive all the time is that you have to be, light can't fellowship with darkness. And so let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about that message for a second.
Yeah, that, especially, we have a common background with how we were raised in a, you know, that good old Pentecostal church, with that Jamaican upbringing as well. And there's this strong belief that if you are a certain way, if you live a certain way, if Jesus is your best friend, that's the, first of all, sometimes that's what we're taught too. Jesus, the only friend you need, right? Strike one. The next one is, you're right. How can two walk unless they agree? And that was hammered, especially with my grandma. That was hammered, that you have to watch who your company is. And this is the interesting part. We talked a little bit about this earlier, the idea that we can take a part of scripture, but not actually hit on the full intention of it. And what we see from scripture is that friendship does matter. Who you hang with does matter. But it does not give indication that it has to be a believer. And so that is a little controversial. It is very touchy. But the idea that can the unbeliever be friends with the believer? Ask Jesus that question, right? Like, I think it's so easy for us to say, how can two walk? Well, what did he pursued Zacchaeus? He said, hey, little tricky man, come on over here, hustler. I'm coming to your house. And so the idea is, if we really want to be like Jesus and model him, the greatest, happiest man on earth, what does that look like? Well, there are some friendships with unbelievers as a Christian I should pursue. I should be pursuing people who don't look or think or act like me. And so the principle there is not belief or unbelief. The principle more so in terms of friendship is fools versus wise.
Right.
That's the distinction. Don't hang with a fool. Be amongst the wise.
Right. And so I think you hit on it, people who are not like me. And so there's another scripture that we often heard quoted was that iron sharpens iron. But doesn't that mean that the other thing has to be sharp in order to cut?
Say that again.
The other person has to be sharp, right? And so the idea is that there's going to be friction. But anytime there's growth, there's friction. Ask a kid that's trying to shove their foot in the shoe that's too small. You ever had your kids try to tell you, no, mommy, it fits. And you're like, your toe is right here.
Triggered right now.
As you grow. And as you grow, you're naturally going to outgrow the things that served you in a season.
Yes.
Right? And it's not to say that you're going to, and so I'm getting to a point. You're going to outgrow the things that may have served you well in a season, right? Like that favorite thing that you had, but now you have outgrown it. And it's not that you value it any less. It holds the same value, but it does not hold the same usefulness in this season, right? The trouble is that when you decide that you have to have friends who are all just like you, that God forbid you go through a growth spurt, you now have nobody on your level.
That's it.
Right? Or you realize that now you're growing in different directions, right? My mom has all kinds of plants in her garden. And I noticed that one way that she makes sure that certain of her plants that like to spread out, like she'll put sticks so they'll grow around the sticks or the fence or whatever it is. Your friendships shouldn't be just holding you in one spot in life. They're supposed to be able to move with you. Because like you said, we're always moving, whether or not we realize it. Yeah. And if you do have a friendship that's holding you in this one spot, for your entire day, all of your days, then you have to ask yourself, is this really a friendship that I can grow in?
Yeah.
Right. I think the danger that we sometimes find ourselves in is now we have grown beyond the season where that friendship was serving its purpose. And we now have to move into a new season. And we either want to bring the old season with us.
There it is.
Right. Or some of us, we're just going to be honest, don't honorably move from season to the other, one season to the other. Yes. Like, we pull out all the winter stuff, but we never bother to put the summer stuff away. So now the house is just a mess. It's just nasty.
And now it's cluttered. And now that clutter, now all of that clutter is affecting our actual growth. And so even the idea of that, I'm listening to you say about a growth spurt, and what we don't realize is we can stunt our own spurts depending who we have around us, based on who's actually around us, who are we letting speak into us? Because that's the deep part about friendship too. It's that intimacy to be able to say, hey, here's my soul here. Here's what I'm passionate about. We're not talking about acquaintances here. We're talking about, I am willing to be vulnerable enough to show you parts of me that don't make it to the highlight reel of social media, right? You're gonna get, you get the unfiltered part of me. And I think that's also why it can be so frightening and so, again, disorienting when we think about the idea of growing out of and growing past. And sometimes we don't meet that with the right response, you know? And so it's out of that sense of, sometimes it creates a level of guilt or obligation when you see a friend and you can identify, hey, I've moved in a certain place and it seems like you're okay in this area. And so the first step is like, well, come on, let's go. You know, let's do it together. Come on, homie. This me, we gonna conquer it together. And you'll have a friend that's going, nah, I'm good. I'm good right here. And that, listen, that creates a level of sorrow because you're going, I know the Lord said, I have to go here. And so sometimes when you look at responses, people will even turn and start to almost scoff at the friend or have a response of like, why won't you just get better? When in fact, that's not even anger at the friend as much as it is sorrow at the loss of an impending relationship. You know, this is going to have to end in a certain way. And I totally agree with you. I think we do need to do a better job at honoring the necessary endings. We do.
One of the skills, the tools that I've learned, I've learned it over the years, but it's only recently I realized that it could be applied to my friendships. Like, I've learned to do it with my kids. I've learned to do it with my students. So I teach at the college level, especially when you're teaching adults. You never, if someone has put their heart and soul to a paper, you never want to just tell them, man, this thing is bad. Like, you can't do that. So And so there's that compliment sandwich. And I'm not saying that there's a formula for tough conversations, but one of the things that I've realized is that whether the friendship is going to continue or it's not going to continue, any conversation that starts with, let me tell you the things I love about you, will rarely go as badly as you think.
That's so good. It's true.
Right? I think, and so when I say honorably, I think sometimes we either just stop talking to people, we stop taking their phone calls, stop interacting with them, and they're like, what did I do, right? Or because we moved on, like you said, we start scoffing at the friend, like, oh, they're not getting their life together, they're not, and now we're saying that to our new friends, right? Not even talking about that piece, right? Or when we do go to talk to them, it's like, well, my life has just moved in another direction and I gotta go. Versus acknowledging what they have been to you, even in, and this might be another controversial thing, but even in friendships where you understood that you couldn't stay in it, especially as a person of faith, right? That you understood you couldn't stay in it because you're, what was happening in that friendship, the activities of that friendship, maybe the friendship was toxic, but for whatever length of time you had that friendship, it serves as something for you. It might've been a crutch, right? Am I been a source of enabling, right? But the point is, it did serve something in your life. And to say that I didn't get anything out of this experience, right? And that's a new way to frame moving on in relationships, right? Because we like to be like, we like to disregard whatever we let go.
Yeah.
But just because I had to get rid of that pair of boots doesn't mean that those weren't boots I wore 360 out of 360. 5 days last year.
You were amazing and had your outfits looking wonderful every single time. You was popping every time you were in the boots. Don't do that now.
Don't act funky now. It might have hurt your feet, but you was wearing them all the time. Right. And so, but that's how some of us get. And so I'm learning that if we can express our appreciation for what has been, we can better move into what is now and what will be.
You're right. One of the things that I'm thinking about, typically we're working on for the next season, season four of the show, it's all about transition. And the title of it is really, how do you know when it's time to go? And one of the things that I've been reflecting on is this idea of honor, because I think as a church culture, we can become obsessed with that word and what it looks like and all of its variations. And especially in the context of our past, what you sense in the earth, me personally, I'm not a prophet by any means. What I believe is clearly the Lord is doing something new. It's palpable in every arena, business, ministry, in your house, he's just doing something new. And if we're not careful, that nostalgia will creep on up and it will actually cut into what the Lord is trying to do. So now we have what he talks about, that old wine into new wineskins. And so the thing about that is we can honor our past without repeating it. And we can honor our past without trying to duplicate it for what the future requires. The future does not require a repeated past.
That's so good.
The future needs something new. And that's why I'm in the process of becoming and transitioning. Pace is so important. Because if you slow down in an area where you're supposed to move, you'll miss crucial components. How do we know this? Again, look at Jesus, right? If you notice his pace, one writer says it this way, that Jesus operated, he moved at the speed of love, 3 miles an hour. He walked everywhere, but he knew when it was time to be at that well. He knew when it was time to stay right here. He knew, can you imagine the woman with the issue of blood reaching out and grabbing him? That was a pace issue. And so even in the context of friendships, there are certain friendships that if I'm slowing down, because I'm trying to, or I'm that fear, that obligation, that guilt has me slowing down with a friend that I know that relationship has to end. Is it possible that that'll cost me a future friend?
That's so good. When Peter was like, you ain't going nowhere. Jesus was like,
hey, what happened? That's the perfect example. You have a friend that's trying to block you from what you know you have to do. And there are certain moments. Jesus was his friend, his leader, and all of that. And he said, no, not today, devil. He had to literally rebuke his friend. Because the other component of that transition is there are some friends who can only handle us in one area of our lives. As long as we are operating on a level that we're comfortable with, that they're comfortable with, they have no problem. As soon as that transfiguration, operation transfiguration, once that comes into play, that friend goes, wait a minute. No, I like you this way. I like you right here. That's too much studying. That's too much work. Where have you been? Haven't seen you in a while. Looks like you striving. Looks like you, I don't want you going to the future. And the response that we have to that is absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why? Because if I care about my purpose, if I care about pleasing the Lord, then I care about my purpose. And if I care about my purpose, I cannot allow nostalgia to block me from what I'm supposed to do and who I'm supposed to become.
Yeah. And you know, one of the reasons why I love talking about Peter is because I love that, you know, not allowing anything to block you from who you're becoming. I love talking about Peter because look where Peter's life went. Sometimes you have to keep going for your friend to get to where they need to go.
That's so good. It's true.
Because we're talking about transitions here. Like Peter was in a season where he couldn't understand, but by fulfilling his assignment, Jesus opened the door for Peter to get the assignment. You know what I mean? For Peter to understand the assignment.
Well, it's so true. He didn't understand it, but it didn't mean he never would. And that's important too, in terms of our friendships, is I think it's important, Andrea, that we begin to give people grace, emotional reactions to our life. And it's so hard to do because we're used to seeing those memes and those one-liners and those tweets that basically say, hey, if they don't like what you're doing, cut them off, leave them alone. I've never been in an environment where the cutoff way was so popular. We've become this cancel culture, even with the people who loved us most at one point. You mean the person that I was breaking bread with? I have to not just give them space, but cut them off? Imagine. And so I feel like we need to have moments where you can see when your friend is in a bind or they're in a place of quandary and wonder and they're not sure themselves. give them the space to say, even if they insult you, being able to say, you know what, you had an off day and that's okay. You know what, it may be an off season. I'm going to give you space. I think that's also, sometimes when we have friendships, we only see what what they're doing for us, friendship. So as a real friend, I have to be willing to also see who I'm in relationship, what's going on with them.
Yeah.
And even if the friendship transitions and it's no longer, I've had a friendship recently that I had to end essentially. And there's no drama, there's no beef behind it. What did it become? Hey, there's some problems here. There's a bit of tension. I'm gonna give you space. When I realize that this is the choice, this is willful, this is intentional, I have no qualms. I have no animosity towards you. As your friend, I can love you from right where you are. The access has changed, but the heart towards you has not. And that's really important when we're moving through friendships.
And I think you've hit on an excellent point that the change of proximity doesn't mean that there's a change in the love.
That's so true.
It may change your access. It may change how far you have to go to get to me, or I have to go to get to you, but that does not mean that love doesn't live there.
Absolutely. And I think this is really important too, because out of the hurt, you can, you know, I was talking with my husband about this, and his mindset is like, don't worry, the person will come back around. And I said, you know, in the beginning, when he would say this, I'd say, it don't matter. I'm not doing it. All of that, right? Because again, that anger, but peel it back. My feelings are hurt. My little thing, we was friends. And what happened now is, hey, if the person comes back, if they never come back, my heart towards you is, I really wish you the best. I really wish your life do well and your family do well and all be well with you and in your soul. And being able to do that, being able to say goodbye, there's nothing more honorable, if we want to use that, than the ability to wish a person well and mean it. Honor the bye.
Listen, every time you get to talking about the Last Supper, that's where you're that honor it, like. That thing eats at me, because Jesus is like, Judas, I know what you gotta go do. Go do it, boo.
Honey.
And he didn't treat him no different.
No. No.
He told
him, he said, hurry up.
Get going.
Oh, Jesus. And I want to be like that. I want to be like Jesus in my heart, as the song used to say. I want to be able to know, because in friendships too, you know, the friend who's like, they're not always for you. They're not always for you. And look at how Jesus handled Judas. The thing that grabs me every time about that particular text is Jesus washed Judas's feet too. He washed all of those feet. Now here, let me tell you what son would have done. If son was Jesus in that moment, I'm waiting till you leave, Negro. I'm waiting until you leave. Let me tell you. I would, because that part of the scripture is my favorite. I'm getting comfortable, so I have to calm myself.
Hold on. Not only am I waiting to leave, but I'm going to text everybody else, be like, y'all need y'all to stay. Don't say nothing.
Listen, I would definitely say, hurry up. If I'm looking and I know that this man is about to be the reason why I have to die, I will say that, because it's a boss line. When Jesus looks at Judas and says, whatever you got to do, do it quickly. I mean, you can just hear it. That's a boss line. I'm definitely here for the boss line. But the washing of the feet too? You mean he's on his knees washing the dirty feet of his betrayer? Baby, this is why I'm in the process of becoming, because I don't have it like that yet. But one day I trust I will. Could you imagine? Can we do that even on a regular level? Can you see the person that was once your friend? Can you be friends with, or can you be kind-hearted to the person that befriended you because your influence started to grow, only to take notes and then duplicate what you do? Can you be friends with that person?
Wow.
Can you be friends with the person that gossips about you, but calls you to say, hey, just seeing how you doing? And you know that how you doing is really information that they're just trying to siphon out of your life, to then go run and tell whoever. Can we be friends with those people? And it doesn't mean, can we be friendly? Can we be loving towards
right,
them?
Right.
I mean by that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's an important distinction. Like, just because I realize that you maybe shouldn't have so much access to me doesn't mean that I have to treat you funky, you know?
That's the key. A lot of times we want to redefine the relationship with an extra oomph of, I also want you to know why I'm treating you this way.
I need you to know that I know.
Yes. And interestingly enough, Jesus knew. But look at how he's, I know what you're about to do, so go do it. And again, when we keep our purpose and our focus in mind, that's how we can treat people better. And that's the reason why he was able to do that, because it's a bigger part. And so even with some of our friendship transitions, when I can realize, wait a minute, all you're doing is making room for what's to come, I don't have to treat you terribly. My soul is expanding. I don't have to treat you terribly.
Ooh, that's my new thing. My soul is expanding.
No, I don't have to do any wrong to you because you've done wrong to me. Look at what the Lord is affording me. This is why future is so important, right? This is why purpose is so crucial. Because if we look at that pace, if we look at the cadence of what's necessary for what's to come, I can't do that. I'll shorten my own self. I'll cheat my own soul if I begin to treat you the way that you've treated me.
There it is. There it is.
Transition has to be handled with care.
There it is. Transition must be handled with care. Must be handled with care. Must. You know what's even funnier to me is that I think about the fact that all the other disciples asked, Lord, is it me? Which means either everybody was doing shady stuff or Jesus was so gracious that they couldn't even tell that anything was amiss.
Telling you. Wouldn't know. Wouldn't know.
The fact that everybody else is like, is it me? Is it me? Like, why you think it's you?
Telling on yourself. Did I? Is it me? I'm going to be honest. I'd be one of those. I would be right there. Did I do it, Jesus? I'm so sorry. Yeah. And it's so crucial to see the humility. You know, I get it. Squad goals, swag, all of those things. Here for it. It's fun. But the level of humility to be able to bless the man that's about to do you in. That's a different kind of maturity. It's a different kind of love. And I think what we need to pay attention to is how we handle people. It's a reflection of how we not only handle ourselves, but it's a reflection of the condition of our souls. And that's why it's so important that when people leave us or we have to leave them, we treat them a certain way. Because what's going on in your soul is what's always going to be at play. And if I really do believe that he has an expected end for me, if I really do believe that he loves me and cares for me, and that that same friend is made in the image of God, why would I treat a fellow image bearer with such animosity? Why is that necessary? And play that all the way through. Who am I becoming when I do that?
Wow, that's so good.
And that's the deception of it, right? Is you can think that you've evolved. Oh, I don't hang with them anymore. Sure, but your soul has actually regressed some if there's still so much anger and vitriol against a person for what they did to you. It means we haven't learned how to heal well. And so we have to also keep that in mind too, right? That in our process of, hey, you may not be serving me anymore. This may not work. This friendship isn't working out. That's understandable, but how are we handling that? How are we handling this transition?
Yeah. So before we wrap up, you've kind of gone into it a little bit and I love it. My soul is expanding. That's going to be my new line. Anytime something goes or something's lost or something, my soul is expanding. God's just making room. My soul is expanding.
It is, I'm telling you.
But, what's our soul work as we go through transitions, especially in our friendships? What's the work that we should be doing for ourselves?
That's a really good question. And I think if there's ever any work that matters, it is working towards love. Honestly, it's the hardest thing. It is the most beautiful thing. It is the area that your soul will resist the most. It is, how can I become more loving? How can I love others well? How can I love Jesus deeply? Because those two things, that's the foundation of a beautiful friend. That's the requirement to a beautiful friendship. is this ability to work on my soul so much that my first reaction to an insult is not a clapback. Right? That's the, and so when I say, like, because, you know, we're in church, we grew up in church, we understand that background. And so some of these words that we hear all the time can become very cliche. So you hear love and you can, you know, we can all say, oh, okay, yeah, I get that. No, no, no. On a very cellular level, my first response is where my soul is. So if I'm in a friendship, if I'm in life, if someone cuts me off in traffic and my response is not self-control, but it might be another one. I'm either using my hands or using something. Then there's something wrong here that says, hey, I've got to work on my soul. How am I treating my spouse? How am I treating my friendship? So even with that friendship thing, my belief is our spouse is our closest friend, our best friend. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. Or the best marriages they're formed through friendship, right? And so through that, how do I treat my spouse in that friendship? If he does something that I don't like, what's my first response? Am I becoming more loving? And so that's the real key of soul work, is this whole journey of ours. And I think, Andrea, as we wrap up, the most beautiful part, that's the gospel at work, right? Is here's this Jesus taking people from all areas of life, every color, every creed, every nation, people who started off with incredibly terrible tempers. Look at John. In the Gospels, John was like, can we call fire down on these people to kill them? Because they say in your name, Jesus, but they not with us. So can we kill them? That same John is little children love one another. Look at the transformation. Our favorite, we just talked about him, Peter. Peter was cussing. Peter was denying. Peter was out here cutting people's head. Here's this angry, violent, impetuous, moves by the seat of his pants. That's who the rock, you're the rock. Look at that stability. How does Peter go from I'm moving by my emotions to I've become the stable example for the church? And I believe that the soul work for us is the ability to start one way and not beat ourselves up over how we started. So even with some friendships, I know people, they're terrible friends. I was not always a great friend. I'm quick to, I don't always respond. I'm not always the most there for you. I'm not vulnerable right away. My first response is not vulnerability. That doesn't make for good friendship. Long-lasting, beautiful friendships, it requires community. And that means not only am I doing the soul work of my own soul, but I'm making space for everybody else's too.
That's beautiful. I'm doing the work for my own soul, but I'm making space for everybody else's too. That's the perfect ending.
If you are not yet following me, you can head over to Step Into Purpose. That's Step In, the number 2 Purpose. On Instagram, on Facebook. You can also follow me at stepintopurpose.com if you want to engage more and join the conversation.